This is Barbara Glickstein for HealthCetera. I recently overheard a conversation between friends. One woman said to the other, "I will not discuss this presidential election with my adult children. We have different political positions and we're not voting for the same candidate. I want to remain in touch with them. It will break things up." Wow, I thought to myself, could a political conversation with your adult children be that contentious? Yes, I guess it can be. Today's politics divide parties and friends and families too. There are a lot of issues that are dividing Americans now, and that makes it harder for people who are Republican to sort of like live with their Democratic family members and vice versa. This ideological divide is not the only 2024 election issue creating tension in families. A difference in ways the current generations parent their children can be quite different from their parents' generation. In my own social circle of grandmothers, we discuss these differences. We also acknowledge how much we learn new ways, but also eye roll over some of the newer parenting decisions. It's led me to invite my dear friend and colleague, Francine Smilin, who is a certified executive coach, recently retired from a very illustrious career in training and organizational development with her own business. She's excels at creating a safe space. She's a really great listener, both as a friend and I know professionally. She creates circles and workshops where people really do share. She's also experienced some of her greatest joys as she's shared with me and others, being a grandmother to two beautiful girls and some sorrows she may or may not talk about today. Her granddaughters are Francesca and Talia, and we spend time sharing stories with each other about our love for our grandbabies. So she recently, in the last year or so, created the Grandmother Circle. It's a workshop series that's focused on how you can best approach different parenting approaches and what are your own human development changes as you become a grandparent. So welcome to HealthCetera, Fran Smilin, and happy to have this conversation with you for our listeners to maybe ch be challenged from some of these thoughts and ideas that I think we all might be living at the moment. What do you think?
Oh, I think so. Thank you, Barbara. Thanks for having me. And there's nothing we like to talk about more than our grandchildren and the complexities of this new gener that this new generation brings to our families and the joys.
Absolutely. So, what motivated you? I know you're a good listener. I already mentioned that. You have certainly friends in your own cohort of circles, both professionally and socially. What made you start this series?
So there were a couple of things. Barbara, you mentioned the tragedy in my family. So 4 years ago, my first grandchild, who was Francesca, was born the first day of the pandemic. And it was a wonderful couple of months until it wasn't. And she was diagnosed with a brain tumor at 6 months old and spent the next 3 months in a hospital in Boston in the height of the pandemic. And it was that point I realized that my role as a grandmother, despite the pandemic, is completely different than what my role as a parent was. I was thrust into the role of a witness, and I was bearing double grief, that of a parent of my daughter and her husband who were going through this, and that of the potential and eventual loss of my granddaughter. So that was the first spark. And I looked for like grandparents, other grandparents who were going through this. And maybe because it was the times and the insanity, but I really couldn't find any. So that was the first plant seed planted. Then one of my closest friends, Michelle Cree Bauer in Lenox, Massachusetts, started a granny circle in her synagogue, and she handpicked people to join the group. And I said, well, that's nice. And I do belong to a synagogue, as you know. And I wasn't sure I wanted to be in this group with the people from the synagogue. So I said, well, I'm just going to open it to other groups. And I found my first group was an affiliation group of women over 50 who agreed to run this as an experiment. And we had a nice, we did it over 6 months, once a month. And it turned out that that caused a lot of dropout. So period, I'll leave it at that. Those were my two inspirations. And I floated it first to this women's group. However, in that women's group, one of my other goals was to make new friends and meet people different than my usual social circle, and I did. I deepened one friendship and I made two very nice new friends. So that was my inspiration. It's like, there's got to be a wider audience for this, you know?
First, I want to acknowledge knowing you and knowing during the time of Francesca's life, her very short, beautiful life, and then difficult time. I want to acknowledge that and the amount of love and outpouring of love and connection that created between the two of us, as well as for your beautiful family. And so grateful that two beautiful new grandbabies have come into this world. And Francesca is very much still a part of the family, spoken about, pictures all over your daughter and son-in-law's home about it and your home. And so for those who are listening who maybe have experienced a loss of a child or a grandchild or a niece or a nephew, there's that connection. And I think some of this conversation is about grandmothering, but it's also about being in families today. But we're going to focus on the role of grandmothers because that's your work. But I'm often moved by this kind of conversation where it does extend beyond that. So if you're started to listen and wonder, is this for me? Are you connected at all in a relationship, in a family relationship that maybe needs some fine tuning, or maybe more than fine tuning, to think about what are the issues of boundaries? What is the communication issues going on? Is it not just around grandparenting and parenting? But let's stick to that subject. But I know when I listen to people talking about things that matter, I often find a way that I reach into that conversation. Do you know what I mean, Fran?
Yeah. It's interesting because while this, I reached out to another organization to see if they would run it because they have a very vast audience and a great marketing team. And they jumped on it without even meeting me. And they have a parenting center and they just saw this as a new audience for them. And it was really exciting. And it was a new audience for me too.
Great. So what are some of the major themes? I know that you designed this workshop. It's a series of 6 to 8 sessions. I know you are careful about creating relationship first before people, but how quickly did that happen? I know you're in a series right now. What's it like? Give us some texture. Give us some of the content.
Yeah, in about, I'd say 5 to 10, if there are 8 people in this current group, there were 8 people when we started the other group. I think the connection started within 15 minutes when each person shared why they were there and what were some of their priorities that they wanted to work on. And I think that was it. And we took off from there. I mean, there's something extraordinary about people who want to be there, who have a commonality, which is grandmothering. And we all agreed it would be a very different kind of workshop than if we had the male grandparents there, grandfathers. And we're all New Yorkers. So that made it, you know, a really dynamic session. So some of the topics, we start off, as you said, you know, getting to know each other, starting to tell us about your grandchildren, what's your grandmother's name, what's your granny name, you know, there are a lot of bubbies in New York, like you and I. And then I use a lot of that time, I come with a list of topics that we've worked on or that others have suggested, and I have the group prioritize what they want to work on. And what always N of two has risen to the top is what do you think of your children's parenting? Okay. And then how should you intervene if something is going on that you don't like or that you don't approve of? We spent 2 sessions on that this time around. And then the other grandparents, significant others, is a big one.
Not of your adult child, the in-laws, if you will. Yeah, those people. Okay.
And that's tonight's topic. And everyone's going, I'm going to be there early, you know. And then a new one, I'm very, you know, good about managing time. We keep it to 90 minutes. We could probably go for 2 hours, but I believe at leaving at the high point and creating excitement and appetite for more. Next week's session, this just came up out of this group, it wasn't in my last group, is our children and our aging. Like, how do we feel about our aging? How do our children feel about our aging? How does it impact our ability to grandparent, you know, in different ways? And this, the groups tend to be, again, N of two, women over 60. I think we have people close to 80 in this group. So there's a whole dimension of physicality, mortality that comes in. And then our last session this time, and this group is running for 6 weeks consecutively. And I think that's much better in the dynamics. We could probably go for eight. I'm going to check in with them about that, you know, for the next time I run it, is about how does being a grandmother impact your friendships? You know, and you and I have talked about this, when you have friends who don't have grandchildren and you're like bursting at the first words, like, and they go, oh yeah, really? You know, think the Yankees will win the World Series. That's, you
we
know,
hope so.
And then I'm going to end, I just decided that this morning, with asking people, and now I'm going to cry and you will too, to write a little legacy, you know, what legacy they want to leave for their grandchildren.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what are some of the issues? I know that, again, this is this group's issues, but you have repeated the workshop. What are some of the key concerns people are experiencing in the families that they want to try and figure out a better way to be in that relationship and not have it be both attention or biting your tongue or saying something you shouldn't say? So how are you suggesting people manage it? And what are one or two of those issues, Fran?
Yes, so I think what's come up unanimously, and it really surprised me, was for all of us, how aligned our children are with their partners, spouses, in raising the children to a fault in some of our minds. Like, well, do you want milk in your coffee? I don't know. I have to ask Andy. You know, it's like, and it's like, kind of leave, the feeling is it kind of leaves us if out of the connection with our birth child. So, you know, the spouse partner has taken the role, and the dialogue between the grandmother and our birth children has changed, because there's now a threesome in the dialogue. And that's a big one, you know. And if you don't agree with what their decisions are, how do you, should you, could you bite your tongue? And what does that feel like? And that's been a tough one. I mean, you know, these are all urban women, and a lot of them have suburban grandchildren, and they all like scooters. So we came to the conclusion last week that we hate scooters and we hate driveways. That was our ultimate, but they think scooters are great and putting the kids on the back of a bike is great. So, you know, and so that's the question about, you know, when do we intervene if we feel our own anxiety rising about safety issues?
So safety is a big theme then. It seems like safety, the difference of parenting will often come down to what looks like risk-taking as mm-hmm. opposed to carefully thought out decisions to let the kids on the scooters by parking lots and driveways versus the back of electric bicycles
right.
And what generationally we might think is not safe. So there's that there's a real tension of two very different realities, isn't it?
Yes. And we came to the conclusion, and I'm not sure, you know, a psychologist would approve, is that if we feel anxiety about the safety, we have to own that. And we have the right to say, you know, and this is my own experience. My son, we were by a pool that didn't have a gate around it. And my oldest granddaughter, Talia, didn't want to go in the water, but she was filling a water gun from the pool. And my son-in-law was on his phone. And I said, it takes a second. And I said, put your phone down, pay attention. And he could hate me for that. But if something had happened, I would have been very miserable with myself. So we came to the conclusion that if you're feeling anxious, you can own that by saying, you know, I'm not really used to seeing one-year-olds on the back of a bike seat, and it makes me very anxious. How do you protect her? You know, something like that. So that's, and the other thing, another thing that's happened, which I think has been really good, is a side effect, is it's opened up conversation with our children. So for example, we were all marveling at this phenomenon of the alliance between our children, the parents, you know, of our grandchildren, and wondered where that came from. Like, Is it something, did they pick a partner based on that? Did they negotiate it? Did they learn it from us? And look, we're a pretty white privileged community. And we all had conversations with our kids about where did that come from? You know, and they looked at us like we had three heads. It's like, well, doesn't everybody do that? You know, but it was a really good family conversation. And I think there will be others, like about, for me, like I just had the thought this morning about, you know, who are my grandkids' guardians? You know, what have my children done to protect their family? And I'll blame it on the group, but I'll say, you know, we just had this discussion and, you know, I'm curious, what have you set up? You know, so your original question was, what are some of the other issues? I think another issue is negotiating time.
To be with the grandkids?
Yeah. Now, that was a surprise to me, how these, you know, every family is different, how these relationships, these families are all so different. I have one colleague who moved from California and lives in the brownstone basement of her children's brownstone, and is the negotiation was she's full-time caregiver. I have other people whose children live in Europe, and how do they negotiate that? You know, for me, both my kids work and I want to see the grandchildren more, but they have very full lives. And how do you balance that with your own life and make your own needs known? So those, you know, everybody has an issue about time. It just varies depending on geography and what other commitments are. I mean, we all tend to be retired, you know, we're in these groups, most of the women are retired or working part-time.
So a major thing in addition to safety are boundaries and time.
Yes.
You know, and again, these are themes that are in other relationships, but it's critical in terms of, you know, you talked about wanting to discuss legacy in the final session, and what do we impart? How do we use technology for those long distance relationships? I know people similarly who once or twice a year perhaps is the most they're seeing and spending time with their grandchildren, and they live on FaceTime with regular scheduled book readings and things like that. You also talked about aging, and I was wondering, how do some of the women describe how they've changed as a result of becoming a grandparent?
That's a really, even have they changed in relation to their aging
or just their own, yes, their identity. You know, I have friends who won't be called, but I have one friend who did not want to be called grandmother or Nana or Bubby, or she wanted to be called by her first name. She felt that it aged her too much and her identity felt too shifted by being a grandmother. I think she's changed subsequently, but that was an initial response.
I think, you know, it's a very good question. I'm going to add it to my list. From what I've picked up from these groups is becoming a grandparent has expanded people's hearts to unlimited, immeasurable ways. And that it's complicated the relationship with the children, and in some cases with the spouse of the children, in terms of the relationship with the grandchild. I've never heard a negative word. It's only been, this is the most amazing connection that I had no idea. I thought I loved my children. I did, but this ain't nothing like this, right?
Ain't nothing like it, right.
Nothing like, so one of my colleagues in the class had a great line. She said, you know, our children's job is to civilize their children. Our job is to protect their children. Mm. And I
That's beautiful. Now,
add to that, our job is to give them the utmost boundless love that there is.
We need more of that. We need more of that in the world.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah. And I also was wondering about humor as a way of breaking some of this tension. Has it saved us? It's certainly saved me in some instances to sort of laugh at myself or make a joke about something, but you're trying to get a point across. Do you think that's an effective Communication technique, Fran.
Yes, and it came up in our last two sessions because we were talking about how do we deal with our fears about the safety of our kids. And we agreed that we will use humor as much as possible. So my strategy is if I'm worried about something, I'll write in a text. And that was the other thing that came up, the use of text as a form of communication. It's like neurotic mother thought, colon. And then that's my preface. Another woman told a great story about she and the other grandparents and the parents of her grandchild were all in the playground with this one kid who was on the monkey bars, and everyone was hovering. And my friend Robin was hovering with the other grandparents, and Robin didn't see a log that was on the ground, and she tripped over it and broke her arm. So I was like, we were laughing and she was laughing, but it's like, that's her humor. You know, this is a log moment for me. You know, I'm hovering, but I'm not paying attention to myself. And we laugh a lot in these groups. We laugh a lot with each other, and we haven't cried that much, although I think I did a little bit, because every time I talk about Francesca, I cry. And yes, we agreed that prefacing any of our anxieties, saying, you know that I could be really an anxious Jewish mother here. So if you know that about me, let me put this out here. And that
I
seems
love that.
To make it easier for us and easier for them to hear.
So we have just a moment left. And, you know, I opened our conversation today talking about the political divide in families. And I'm just curious, you know, you don't have to know for sure, but could any of these approaches maybe begin to help people talk with each other and families to find common ground? If there is, not only in your family, to start having more conversations, you know, safety, boundaries, humor, I'll repeat some of your major themes. Can any of this translate, Fran?
You know, it's interesting because we made an agreement. So one of the things I did in the first session was to set up a set of community commitments, agreements. And one of them was we leave politics at the door because we could spend 90 minutes every week talking about it. So I think in families where politics are so painfully hard to discuss, that's an okay thing to do, to say Thanksgiving dinner, no political discussion. So setting that boundary, I think, is a good thing. I'm not sure, you know, I have very strong political feelings, as you do, and fortunately, most of my family agrees with me. I don't know if humor could work. It's almost to the point now of beyond humor for me. I don't know. And maybe having side conversations with people whom you know disagree with you or who don't see things the same way before, and saying, look, I know we don't agree, but can we agree that on this night we'll be on our best behavior and we won't talk about it? And it's tricky because I think this is an extremely fraught, probably more fraught than most of the family situations that we've talked about.
Fair answer. I think diplomacy is a word I'd like to bring up, as well as, you know, some opportunities that you are creating in this situation around this kind of tension and this willingness for all of these women to step forward and saying, I'd like this to be better. I'd like us to be able to have a better relationship is the starting point. And I agree with you. I have had experiences in my own family historically where when we did gather, you know, I would say we would start and I would say, I think we should table this because I can see the rest of the night is going to turn into a lot of arguing and then we could still be together. That's was not most recently because that happens less in my family as we've gotten older and lived geographically further apart. So diplomacy graduation certificates might have to be a different workshop that you and I plan together, Fran. I want to thank you for joining me today. Francine Smilin is a certified executive coach whose recent adventure is the Grandmother Circle, working to close the relationship divide to build healthier intergenerational and future family relationships. Thanks for joining me today on HealthCetera.
It's been fun. Thank you, Barbara.